tell your mom about Michael. Got a guy that makes you scream and shout.
Hey everyone, this is Punk News editor Ricky Frankel, and welcome back to Live from It's Not Dead Fest 2, a three-part in-person interview series that I conducted at It's Not Dead Fest 2 in San Bernardino, California. I hope you enjoyed the first installment with Trevor Riley of A Wilhelm Scream. That was a really fun interview for me to do. So for the second installment, I have a returning guest to this interview bonus podcast thing I got going here. I interviewed Spike Slauson of Me First and the Gimme Gimmes and Uke Hunt. It was so hot at the fest that I was actually granted access to interview him in one of the air-conditioned buildings where all of the catering for the musicians and the green rooms were. So if you hear some background noises, it's because we recorded this interview in one of the hallways. But overall, it sounds fine. Spike and I talked about what he planned for his Uke Hunt project, you know, some of the future stuff that he has planned, and some of the background behind it. What he wants to do for the next Me First and Gimme Gimme's live record, which to me is hilarious and genius, and I hope they do it. But I'm not going to ruin the surprise. He gave me an update on the new Revolt release as well, and we talked about a bunch of other stuff, but that's definitely exciting. Again, I want to thank John, Adam, Aubin, and Punk News for letting me do these podcast interviews and for getting me into It's Not Dead Fest 2. I really hope they do it again. It's always, the first one was great, second one was great. I don't know. I don't know how they can outdo the second one, though. It's going to be, whatever, the third one, if they do it, well, it should be awesome. I also want to thank Mike Kubias of Earshot Media, who helped put these interviews together and got me in touch with all the bands. I also want to thank Greg Simpson for producing these podcasts, my brother Andrew for helping me stitch these all together, Brian Priest from Paris for the awesome theme song. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can send us an email or your ransomware to podcast@punknews.org. So to kick off this interview, here is Me First and the Gimme Gimme's cover of Uptown Girl by Billy Joel from their recently released Rake It In, the greatest hits, God, that's tough, compilation. Here it is. So I'm here with Spike from Me First and the Gimme Gimmes and Uke Hunt.
Yes.
So, sir, how are you doing? You're lucky to be in the air conditioning, like yeah. You were talking before we started.
Yeah, it's crazy out there. It's really hot.
For people listening, he is in his Me First in the Gimme Gimme's get up in his purple shirt, purple handkerchief, and bright gold jacket. I don't blame him for being in there.
Yeah, it's not breathing all that well either.
All right, so last time we talked, you talked about how Me First and the Gimme Gimme's choose songs, but to cover. How do you choose songs for UConn compared to that band?
It's kind of like there's this guy that Jamin that plays all these. He's like a jack of all trades and like master of several. He plays sax, he plays harmonica, he plays melodica. Like if it's something that interests him, then that's generally something that. Because if he's not interested, we can't really, he won't even show up.
Really?
That's not really a good, But, when it's good, it's good, how do we pick songs?
Yeah.
There's songs that I like and that I think would work. It's I don't know. It's tough. But I can actually pick songs other than, as opposed to with the Gimmies, where I pick songs that I don't like generally. Like, those are the ones that are going to work. With UConn, I get to pick songs that I enjoy and like thoroughly, like songs that I have liked and love to sing, like say in the shower, stuff like that. Those are the songs that I pick, and they tend to work out because if you pick a rock song and do it with a ukulele and a little drum set, it changes into something else.
Right. Okay. Now, and also last time we talked, you were talking about that Revolt EP that you're working on. How's that coming along?
It's coming. It's slowly but surely. I like the songs. I like the way they're shaping up. It's just we're waiting for time in the studio to finish them, which is kind of in between other people getting in because we're doing things on the cheap. But I'm not in any rush.
Cool.
We'll hopefully start playing shows more in earnest in 2018.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't realize this about you before you started kind of doing music full time. You were in the Fat Records mailroom. What was that like? And also, what era were you kind of sending stuff? Were you working on when you were there?
Like 96, 97.
Oh, so like the heyday. So like the big time stuff.
Yeah, I worked at the mailroom. Not the mailroom. Actually, shipping and receiving. But yeah, it was, heavy. What else? I didn't always send things to the right locations. I think that was part of the reason that they suggested this might be a better fit for me than shipping and receiving. Because I wasn't.
I don't think they were wrong.
I was acquitting myself very well in the shipping and receiving department. Unfortunately, sometimes I didn't even send stuff to the right continent.
So I'm curious. I mean, because you're not the only one that's done that. You've, I believe Chicken from Dead to Me was also in the mailroom before Dead to Me got started.
That makes sense.
How do you? I mean, is that a way to get in on the label, or is it something that just kind of that just worked out? Like, how did it work out for you? Because that's a big jump.
It's somebody. It's like an entry level job for somebody that has no gift for bullshit. You know what I mean? Like any other position at that in that business in the record business has to have a gift for bullshit. They either have to know what they're doing, have to be above entry level, or like have to be able to blag their way into a position where they're, over their head, but nobody's going to notice because it's like a punk lit. You know what I mean? It's like a weird... So, I don't have that gift, and I'm, like, the definition of entry level, so that's why I wound up there. But a lot of people that focus on music, they're entry level their entire lives, And sometimes it works out for them, sometimes it doesn't. But for the people that does work out for, it's usually because they put that above all of other things, other distractions in their lives.
So was it like? So did the label just say like, "Oh, we like this. We like what you're doing. We'll sign you." Or is it kind of like, "Hey, will you take a look?" How did that work out?
It just I'd had cover bands in and around San Francisco that had played. I played with these guys that were in this band called Psychotic Pineapple from the Bay Area. We did cover bands. We did some original songs. And we played upstairs at the Paradise Lounge, where I met my wife, in fact. And
who I interviewed for New Noise, for Stinkies, actually.
Oh, yeah. And that's where we met. And Mike came up to see one of those sets at one point. And then just backstage at the... not backstage, back in the shipping and receiving department, I would sing Stevie Wonder songs and like Alice Cooper songs. And so he said, you know, I got this idea, like most of the good songs on any current punk record at that time was like 96 are covers, you know what I mean? And I would have to wholeheartedly agree, go even further, that like the only good songs from that period were covers. And so why not do an entire record of them, or an entire set of them? And literally you can make that decision and then like go be a band in a week, which is kind of cool. On the one hand, it's cool, self-expression, and people getting something that might resonate with other people, might help them, you know, emotionally. Like, that's a cool thing, too, playing original music. But I think a lot of people who play original music, especially, like, original punk music, they concentrate on the what instead of the how. You know what I'm saying?
Like, no, actually, all they concentrate
on is the what. All they concentrate on is what they're doing. They get way up their own ass about like what they're doing, what they're saying. You know, like, you know, how many syllables are in any given line? You know what I mean? Did I say this? Does this make my, you know, does this make me seem, you know, this way or that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How you do it is like live, like when you get out and do something live and share energy with people and try to like get some chemistry going and to engage people, and not necessarily on like an eye to eye level, because you're on a stage, man, you're under a proscenium arch, so like you're changing reality, like you're kind of warping it, like you're not being real. And there's this sort of, there's this weird, and again this is like mostly in the punk scene, there's this weird preoccupation with staying real, which is like, I think, is totally misguided. And
probably wears off to at some point.
Yeah. I mean, well, they seem to think that, that like their style is an absence of style. Like they criticize people that like dress a certain way.
Like they're proudly avant-garde.
No, they're proudly like non-style or something. Okay. You know what I mean? Yeah, I think is like, well, even like the absence of style is still a style. You know? Like, but all right. So how you do it, like if you're just playing some covers, like these are the songs, this is how we're going to play them. It takes you like a half hour to like arrange them and figure out if it's too long, cut it down a little bit, you know, maybe for a guitar solo in there or something like that. And then you get out and play, and then you figure out how you're doing it. Okay. You're not indecisive about what you're doing. You're constantly working on like how you perform in front of people. That to me, that's what was really interesting about a cover band to me.
Oh, okay. Had you always learned, did you learn ukulele later in life, or did you learn it specifically for UConn, or had you always known how to play it?
No, I learned it because I believe I could fly the R. Kelly cover. Chris Shiflett played the top of it, and then I learned that to play it for live shows, and then just kind of kept dicking around with it, and and then the name, like it all kind of, like the band was just an excuse to get the name out there, you know, like that was kind of the big thing for me.
The name of the band?
The name of the band, UConn, was something that I really, you know,
just needed to happen.
The actual instrument was kind of just incidental, it just, you know, like to serve the name.
How long did it take you? Did you take lessons or anything like that? Or did you just kind of pick it up on your own?
I picked it up, and then there's these books by this guy named Lyle Ritz. He's from Pittsburgh. He did the song from The Jerk.
Really?
Yeah. And he does all these song books with like all these standards and like some pop songs and like really easy to read tablature. So it's you know, he makes it, he was kind of the key to breaking through on that instrument to like, you know.
All right, cool. So last time we talked, I asked you how, like, if you had ever gotten reactions to Me First and the Gimme Gimme Gummers from the band that you guys covered. You said, like, the Eagles hated it.
Yeah.
Have you gotten any reactions on UConn music from the actual...
Never.
Artists?
No. No, none. Like, most of that stuff is so old that, you know, I think it's just off their radar, you know what I mean? Most of the original artists, like, you know, I don't know how much new music the Kinks listen to, but I'm sure when they listen to it, it's not, you know, or the Dave Clark Five, or what, you know, like, I think a lot of those guys are dead, too. But I'm sure when they listen to new music, it's not covers of them, you know?
Right, right.
So, no responses as of yet.
All right.
But we're ready to do a new record, I think.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what's plan? What do you have planned for you now?
I honestly don't know. It's just, it's one of those things, like, I kind of got to keep Jamin interested. So, you know, we'll see. Like, we try songs out in the practice space, and you know, I've thought of themes to do it under, but then that seems kind of like a fool's errand to try to do a theme, because then you end up chasing your own tail and kind of compromising the quality of the overall release just to make the release fit a theme. So I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, because that's a me first thing that does, so.
and it's not something I, you know, I personally would rather do just 7 inches, fun 7 inches.
Yeah, do you have any songs that you think that you already know you want to cover for the next whatever record, whether it's a 7-inch or album?
I'd love to do The Stranger by Billy Joel. There's some Spanish songs that I'd love to do. There's German songs, Italian songs. Domenico Modugno, I'd like to do some of his stuff. Feels So Good by Chuck Mangione.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll be playing some of those songs when we go back east in late October. We're going to French Canada, Quebec City, Sainte-Thérèse.
Very cool.
Montreal, going back down the American East Coast. I think we got a New England show, I think somewhere in Rhode Island, Philly, New York, et cetera,
et cetera. When do you think this is going to be?
This is the end of October into the beginning of November.
Cool.
So, I think the first show, I want to say it's the 27th or the 28th in Quebec City. The last show is going to be, I guess, the 4th, somewhere, I think, New York or thereabouts.
All right, cool. Anything new on the Me First and the Gimme Gimme's front, or just more touring?
A lot more touring, and hopefully a quinceañera.
Like, no, Kim, no.
We've been talking about that.
No.
Like that, and I think that would be a hoot, you know?
That would be
a lot of fun.
It's, you know, would that be a live record like Bar Mitzvah?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's what I was hoping. Like, we were talking about that, and
that'd be
learning some Spanish songs. And we'd probably be down here, because, like, down here, like, in SF, you can't really play, like, out in the yard, you know, at 2 in the morning, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think down here, like, nobody would give a fuck if we were playing, you know,
right,
late. Out in somebody's yard or something like that by the kiddie pool, you know?
Because, you know, I have a story, and this is sort of a little surprise for the listeners now. My brother and sister went to summer camp with Johnny from Johnny's Bar Mitzvah.
Oh, yeah?
And I tried getting him to do an interview for the 10th anniversary or 12th anniversary of that record, and he didn't want to, and I was begging him.
He doesn't want to define him, man.
No, well, yeah, he said he's getting not harassed, but he's getting, like, friended by random people on Facebook because of it, which you guys couldn't have figured for, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, but no, I really wanted that to happen, but it was cool to meet him regardless.
Yeah,
I think he's somewhere.
He's wandering around. Yeah, I saw him
in Northern California.
No, I think he's here today.
Oh, is he down here?
I think he's, like, actually on site. I think I just saw him.
Yeah, but I think a quinceañera album would be hysterical.
Yeah,
that'd
it would
great.
Have to be down here
for sure
in the Grapevine, I think. But yeah, I think that'd be a lot of fun.
All right, cool, man. So just a couple more questions. Is there anyone I know you're trying to stay cool in here. Do you have any specific bands you're going to try and catch while you're at Sunset Fest?
I missed DBH, but I would love to have seen them.
Yeah.
I like a couple Addicts songs for sure. Love the Buzzcocks.
Yeah.
But mainly just trying to stay cool.
I don't blame you. I do not blame you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this, man. I really appreciate it. What Yukon song do you want to play to take us out?
How about The Prettiest Star?
All right, here it is.
prettiest star. Prettiest star.